Well, good morning and welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loratt. We're hoping to have Rebecca Jones, the fired whistleblower from the state of Florida, on this program today. And we're trying to make contact with her right now. But first, two comments that have come in during the last 24 hours. The first comment is about yesterday's speech from Native American activist Mark Charles. Here's what two people have said on our comment line.
So this is what I was thinking. You know, I miss the speeches from Noam Chomsky, Ralph Nader, and others. And this fellow speaking right now is so to the point, so truthful, and it's so perfect. And what I hear sometimes on some of these call-in shows is a bunch of crackpots, just all over the place. And it reminds me that in that situation, they are given a microphone, so their voice is amplified. Wouldn't it be better to not amplify the crackpots' voices and project the voices of the smart people and put these speeches out there and let people listen to that instead of, you know, some guy calling up and calling somebody a liberal or somebody who says they're a liberal and they can't put two words together?
This is Bob with Largo. I just heard about the Boondoggle Toll Road report. Please bring that up on 11 o'clock show and let's get the word out. It's very important. Thank you.
Well, there you have a couple of listener comments that have come in the last 24 hours. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Well, there are more calls for an investigation into the search of a former Florida COVID data scientist's home. A group of Florida Congress members, all Democrats, sent a letter to the state's chief inspector general yesterday. The list calling for investigation includes Kathy Castor of Tampa, Charlie Crist of St. Petersburg, and Darren Soto of Kissimmee. They want to know more about what led the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to show up at the home of Rebecca Jones in Tallahassee last week, taking her computer and some other equipment. She's accused of hacking into a state system to communicate with her former colleagues and allegedly posting a message to urge her former colleagues to speak out about the COVID crisis. Jones has denied accessing the system. Here's the sound of the raid on Jones' home last Monday.
Come outside. Outside.
Who else is in the house, ma'am?
My two children and my husband.
Where's your husband?
Calm down.
You want the children down?
Calm them all down.
What? Mr. Jones, come down the stairs. Now!
Police, come down now!
Search warrant!
Bring
calm down the stairs!
My children!
Oh, Clinton, hang on, let me clear my
house. He just pointed a gun at my children!
Search warrant!
That was the sound of the raid on Rebecca Jones' home last Monday in Tallahassee. This week, the commissioner of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement defended the raid. Rick Swearingen says it's standard procedure to have armed agents exercise a search warrant.
Nowhere in either one of those videos do you see an agent pointing a gun at a child's head. During that 23 minutes, every hard drive in that apartment could have been wiped. They could have been arming themselves. They could have been barricading themselves.
That's Rick Swearingen, the head of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, speaking earlier this week. Jones was fired after claiming the Department of Health was manipulating COVID data to support the governor's reopening plan. Accessing and posting a message on the state's message board is a third-degree felony. Last week in Tampa, Governor DeSantis said the raid was necessary.
Nowhere in either one of those videos.
I mean, one is this this individual became known because she alleged a conspiracy theory at the Department of Health, which is unfounded, never proven at all. She was fired because she wasn't doing a good job. There was none of the stuff that she said was ever proven. You think that would be the end of it? Obviously, she's got issues. On this situation, there was an intrusion of a very sensitive system. It's an emergency alert system. If somebody gets a hold of that, they can do a lot of damage. I mean, you could really frighten a lot of elderly people, other vulnerable populations. So when that happened, the Department of Health did the right thing. They went to law enforcement. They said, we can't allow this to happen and do an investigation. And so the health or the law enforcement looked at the intrusion. They identified the IP address. Then they did what any investigator would do. They subpoenaed the internet provider. The internet provider provided this residence as the IP address that did the intrusion. So they got a search warrant, got the devices, and guess what? They're probably going to be able to match those devices to the intrusion, at which point that's clearly a felony offense. And so I think Floridians want government to protect them. I think that they want these sensitive systems to be protected. I don't think they want them to be intrusion. And just because you're a darling of some corners of the fever swamps, that does not exempt you from following the law.
Rebecca Jones raid before it happened.
What, excuse me?
Were you aware that the Rebecca Jones raid was
I knew there was an investigation. I didn't know what they were going to. It's not a raid. I mean, with all due respect, what you just said is editorializing.
Okay.
They, sir, excuse me, excuse me. No, excuse me. I'm not going to let you get away with it. These people did their jobs. They've been smeared as the Gestapo for doing their jobs. They did a search warrant. Why did they do a search warrant on the house? Because her IP address was linked to the felony. What were they supposed to do? Just ignore it? Of course not. They went, they followed protocol. We actually have video from the Tallahassee PD showing that they were very respectful. She was not cooperative. It was not a raid. They were serving valid process in accordance with the laws and constitution of the United States and the state of Florida. They did it with integrity. They did it with honor. And to say it's a raid is disinformation. And you guys need to draw, excuse me. You guys need to look at facts and stop trying to feed narratives. I understand why you do it, but it's not supported by facts, and so you should be better than that. All right, thanks, everybody.
That's Governor Ron DeSantis last week. We're joined now by Rebecca Jones. Let's see if we can get this to work. Rebecca, are you there? Hi, Rebecca, can you hear me? Okay. Let's see if we can get Rebecca going here. Rebecca, can you hear me all right? Rebecca? Rebecca Jones? All right. We're going to take a break and see if we can get in touch with Rebecca Jones. This is 88.5 FM. Joined now by Rebecca Jones, who is the whistleblower at the heart of this controversy. And Rebecca, thanks for coming on WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to ask you, what's the latest? We played some sound from Governor DeSantis when he was in Tampa at the mental health roundtable where he attacked you. And we also played some sound from the head of the FDLE who said that the raid last Monday, a week ago Monday, was justified and that no guns were drawn on your children. I just want to get your response to the governor and to Mr. Swearingen of the FDLE.
Of course. Well, first, I think it's reprehensible that at a forum for, you know, dealing with stigma around mental health, that he would go after somebody saying they have issues or insinuate somehow that they're deranged at a forum about mental health. I think that's disgusting and did more harm to the mental health community than if he had said nothing. And as the FDLE, I'm not surprised. They're going to keep defending themselves no matter what. They're not going to come out and say, hey, yeah, we pointed guns at kids, are bad. Thankfully, there's video of that that I took inside my house. And video is, you know, worth a million words.
Do you live in a townhome?
Yes, I do.
So it's impossible in a very narrow townhome to draw a gun without aiming it at somebody at some point. But do you think that they deliberately aimed it at the kids? Your kids were at the top of the stairs of the townhome?
Yes. And I told my husband to keep the kids up there in case, you know, the police lost their temper, which they did. And they were at the top of the stairs, and you can see from the video that one of the officers doesn't take out his gun until after I tell him that my kids are upstairs. The rest of them come in. They already had them up. One of them was pointed at me when I opened the door, but one of the officers actually draws his weapon after I tell him that the kids are upstairs.
And you can see that clearly on the video, and many people have seen that video. How old are your children?
2 and 11.
How are they doing right now after this experience?
I don't like to talk too much about how they're doing because I feel like they're both entitled to privacy and to kind of deal with this, what happened, and face it on their own without me going out and saying anything about them, you know, because this will be forever. My 2-year-old is too young to have realized really what was going on. But, you know, the impact of gun violence, which is what this was, on developing children who are older, can lead to a host of issues from PTSD to anxiety, depression, even aggression. And so, unfortunately, that's something we're going to have to be aware of and, you know, help him through if that's something that emerges from this.
Now, the head of the FDLE says this is standard operating procedure. When they serve a warrant and they're looking for something in somebody's home, there are going to be armed agents coming into the home, and you're treated just as anybody else would be treated who has a warrant for a search at their home.
That's troubling. If it's standard procedure to point guns at children when you're looking for a computer, then I think that in itself says a lot about how police conduct themselves on a day-to-day basis.
You compared this to a Gestapo raid.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more why. They say that you waited 23 minutes before you opened the door so that they didn't barge in.
Well, they don't have any evidence that they waited 23 minutes. They uploaded a video that shows that they were outside 13 minutes before the door opened. They called me 6 minutes before the door opened. I turned on the video camera 4 minutes before it opened. And I uploaded all that video, the whole thing, up to YouTube so you can see it. And in that 4 minutes, I was getting dressed and I was hugging and saying goodbye to my kids because I thought they were coming for me. And they didn't announce that they had a warrant until 37 seconds before they were in my house. And I don't consider that a prolonged wait. I'm not some, like, felon who's running, you know, a drug trafficking ring and that they would have to worry would be, you know, armed to the max. And they were there on orders of the governor to seize equipment, including my phone, which was actually their primary target in their search. They asked me several times to go get it. You can hear them on their own video saying that they thought I was flushing it and they need to make sure they got it. For supposedly an email message that was sent over a publicly accessible account. And when the governor sends armed police, at least 10 that I counted, possibly more, I don't know how many were outside at first, to seize your equipment, take your phone, and threaten you with guns, that is Gestapo. There's really no other word for a political hit like that.
Our guest is Rebecca Jones, who was the former data manager of the state's COVID-19 website. She was fired earlier this year by the governor. She alleges that the governor and his administration manipulated the COVID-19 data to make the state situation look better than it really is. Rebecca Jones, Rebecca, you've got a PhD, right?
I'm not finished with my PhD. Finished my coursework and have been trying to finish my dissertation, but the last few years have been a bit busy between having my daughter and then, you know, 2020 was 100% COVID. So hopefully I'll get it done eventually.
You're pretty highly educated when it comes to data, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So the alleged crime is that somebody posted a message on an email account that was accessible by the Florida Department of Health employees. This person urged them to come forward and speak out about what's happening in the state. And it turns out that that's a third-degree felony. Do you want to just comment? I want to ask you whether or not you did it, also it seems pretty harsh if somebody just posts a message on a state message board that it turns into a third-degree felony.
Yeah, that's a political prosecution, although nothing's developed so far since the raid. I haven't heard anything back as far as movement on it. I didn't post the message. The email address and password was available on seven different places on the DOH website. Any person could have logged into it, any person, who just Googled the username and password for that email account. And to so viciously go after somebody for posting a message urging people to tell the truth in the first place is a terrifying ordeal. That they would seek out that kind of retribution for somebody saying, tell the truth.
The governor said a moment ago, we played the soundbite from last Friday in Tampa, where he says that the Department of Health found the IP address for the person who posted the message and then traced the IP address to you.
Yes, it was the Department of Health who provided the IP address, the same Department of Health who I filed a whistleblower complaint against and am currently in litigation against for wrongful termination and a host of, you know, other things that led to the unnecessary death of tens of thousands of Floridians. They were the ones who provided the IP address to the police. And the police then found who the IP address belonged to. DOH would have known the IP address of any device I've ever used to work remotely from when I used to work there. And the fact that they're the only source that is tying me to this is incredibly suspect and should have been scrutinized.
Rebecca Jones is our guest. She's a whistleblower in the state of Florida, and this is WMNF in Tampa. So, Rebecca, can we trust the COVID data that the state is publishing every day?
This is how I advise people with the data that Florida makes public, because that's what I use. To shield myself from any possible criticism that I'm making up numbers, I only use the state's official data. I can bring in data from ACA, from the Department of Health, from the Department of Corrections, from the agency, the emergency, management agency, and any other publicly available source. So that's the only data I ever use on my site. And I always tell people this is a minimum. It is at least this bad. This is what the state is willing to admit to. Expect that it's much worse. And we've seen that in the recent articles in the Sun Sentinel highlighting, you know, the gag order that DeSantis ordered on DOH employees not to speak about COVID in any setting in the weeks up to the election, how they were hiding deaths and manipulating death records from earlier deaths in the year to make it look like fewer people were dying of COVID in the weeks up to the election. And the Miami Herald has done a stellar job investigating data inconsistencies throughout the entire time period. And I also just saw that the Sun Sentinel received the White House reports that the governor refused to release for the entire month of November, that said that Florida needed to take aggressive action in order to try to limit some of the spread that was going on in the state. And these are reports that are encouraged to be made public, sent by the White House COVID-19 team to governors, and ours has been hiding it because it said that they needed to curb activity, they needed to make a mask mandate mandatory, and they needed to take these actions immediately, and he held them back for over a month.
Yeah, and some of that newspaper reporting, the Florida Sun Sentinel pointed out that there is a pattern in Florida's COVID death tally, the official death tally, that suggests that the state manipulated a backlog of unrecorded fatalities, presenting more favorable death counts in the days leading up to the 2020 presidential election in the days immediately afterwards. And that's what you just said. So the newspapers are reporting that it appears that there was, we don't know how it happened, but there was a skewing of the data to look like the number of deaths was actually lower in the days leading up to the election.
Yeah, and that's something that we dealt with when I was there, having to remove deaths. Back in August or September, there was a two-year-old boy who died in Escambia County who DOH listed as a COVID-19 death. I tweeted about it online, and that night they removed him and changed his status as died equals no. Even though the boy did die, he died 2 weeks after testing positive and 1 week after being hospitalized. After that, the governor's office instituted a mandatory review of all pediatric deaths before any of them were added to the database. So now the governor's office has to approve whether or not to add pediatric deaths, and despite 30,000 cases in schools and the dramatic increase in pediatric cases, they haven't added a pediatric death since the summer. And I guarantee that's not because there haven't been any.
Hmm. You've got an op-ed in today's Miami Herald. You write, "My contacts throughout state government kept me current on DeSantis's attempts to hide and manipulate information as I worked on several COVID-19 projects." You go on to write, "Those contacts served as top officials in nearly every state agency involved with the COVID-19 response." Are you saying that that agency heads in the state are seeing this problem but are afraid to speak out?
There are a lot of people, not just agency heads, all the way down to, you know, the grunts like me, who are asked to do things that they feel are dangerous, that are misleading, that could put lives at stake. And over the last 7 months, ever since I was fired, I've had several dozen people from a variety of agencies come to me. And yes, some of them are very high up in their respective agencies. And of course, they're terrified. The entire raid on my house, the whole point of it was to terrify those people, to try to get at my contacts, to see who's talking to me within DeSantis's ranks, and flush them out the way that they fired, I think, 8 or 9 DOH employees around the time that that message that they went after me for was sent. And it's disturbing that the people in these positions are too afraid to speak out because they're worried about the safety of their families. So when death reporting was lagging, I did receive information about why it was happening. There's not a whole lot I can do with that information because it's extremely hard to prove. Luckily, you know, the press are able to get resources that I am not. But to be in the know this whole time has been invaluable to me because it's allowed me to look at things and scrutinize data that's changing and I may not understand why, or if a policy change in reporting occurs, which happens several times, including the pediatric death, people letting me know about that. And that is when you're doing this kind of work and you're in this state, something that really... it can't be, you can't put a number on it. It's that important.
Now that the state has your cell phone and your computer, Do you know, have your attorneys told you whether or not they can just look to see if you sent that message to the Department of Health, or can they take everything that's on your cell phone and on your computer?
I'm unclear about that. The warrant that was signed by a judge that DeSantis appointed and was sworn in less than a month before he signed that warrant, it was the first warrant he ever signed, was basically a blank check. They took external hard drives, they took thumb drives. It's not possible, at least as far as I know, for a thumb drive to send an email, yet they took it all. And that's, I think, very telling, and I'm not sure what they are able to do with it. There's still some legal issues around that. I hope to get all my equipment back very soon in the near future, based on the lack of merit of the warrant and everything involved with how they handled that. But they're not going to find any evidence of that message, and you would think they could just check real quick for that and then give it back. But of course, stealing, you know, that level, that important equipment was an attempt also to shut me down.
Well, our guest is Rebecca Jones. She's the former state of Florida data scientist who says that the state has been manipulating COVID-19 data. She was fired from the state. She is saying that her firing was unjust, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We heard the governor, the soundbite from the governor last Friday. He seems to have it in for you. I mean, he's very angry at you. Usually somebody in power doesn't have to punch down, if you know what I mean. Is, you know, he's the governor. He's going to be there for another 2 years. He's not being removed from office or anything like that. Why do you think he feels so strongly about that? Do you have any insight?
You know, I noticed that back in May, that anytime I'm brought up, his entire, like, demeanor and body language changes. Like, he hates me. It honestly, when you watch him talk about me or listen to him talk about me, he hates me. And that's extremely uncomfortable and disturbing, because while I worked under him for years, I've never actually sat down and had a one-on-one conversation with the man, yet he holds such contempt. And as I started getting anonymous hate mail, I started reading what people called me. One person called me a white nigger trailer trash a-hole. That I don't think DeSantis thinks that he should have to bother with me. As he said, you know, you thought that would be the end of it. I'm not somebody who's a lawyer who has connections or somebody who grew up wealthy and has power. I'm a kid who grew up eating from food banks and had to get a scholarship every educational institution I went to. I went to Syracuse University on a full scholarship. I do come from a very rural and poor area of South Mississippi, and I was a, you know, mid-level management at DOH, and I'm not somebody who's worthy of his time. He shouldn't have to deal with me. And I think that's honestly a large part of it. I think he has contempt for working people, for people that he doesn't see as equal to him or on the same level as him. And for somebody like me, who comes from nothing, to have caused him, you know, this much trouble, I think is insulting to him. I think it makes him angry. And really, that's the only thing that I can think of, because I've never met him, ever, like, one-on-one. I've been in the room with him when he's been there, yeah, a lot at the Emergency Operations Center, but for somebody you've never actually spoken to hate you that much is unsettling, to say the least.
Well, Rebecca Jones is our guest. Her house was raided by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement last Monday, and she's at the center of the a controversy over whether or not we can trust the state's COVID-19 data numbers. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And if you want to send an email question in to Rebecca Jones, you can send it to dj@wmnf.org. Mike in St. Pete writes, Rebecca Jones is a brave hero and a patriot. DeSantis is a bully and a coward trying to silence anyone who reveals his corrupt concealing of the facts That would make him and his hero Trump look like the vain, egotistical fools they are. That's Mike in St. Pete's opinion. And then Rob in Sarasota writes, the FDLE inspector just said, nowhere on that video can you see an officer point a gun at a child's head. He never denies that it happened. He simply says it isn't on the video. People lie and cops are people, writes Rob in Sarasota. And let me read one more email. David writes, Rebecca is a hero. Thank you for the interview. I worry that folks who were in touch with Rebecca confidentially will face similar raids or retribution. What about that, Rebecca?
I do worry about that as well. That was my primary concern. The only reason I put myself back together after what happened Monday to talk to Chris Cuomo on his show on CNN was so that I could send an all-call kind of warning message. Because I didn't want to call all the people that I had been talking to because I thought it was possible that the police were watching my phone to see who I call right after they raid me, and that might tempt them off. So the only way to really reach them is to publicly say, be careful. It's going to be hard for them to figure out who I've been talking to. I used every possible, you know, security measure. But if something seems off, you know, to protect yourself. And make sure that you back up all of the information that you have so that you can prove that what you were saying was true in case they come after you, because that's really the only way to protect yourself. And I'd like to also say, I'm not a hero. I like to think of myself as a patriot, but not as a hero. All I did was tell the truth and speak out, because if I didn't, a lot more people would have died. And I don't think that's heroic. I think that's what any decent human being would have done in that situation is say, no, I'm not going to be a part of this, like the message said, and this is what is happening, and this is what the truth is. And you can make whatever decisions you want about how you behave off of that information, but you're at least entitled to the information. And I don't think that's heroic. I just think that's, I think anybody would have done that.
Rebecca Jones is our guest, and this is WMNF in Tampa. She is the whistleblower who was fired by the state and whose home was raided last Monday by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Amin writes in, can you sue them? Can you file a lawsuit, writes Amin.
Well, this is, you know, America, so you can sue anybody for anything, anytime, pretty much. But I have a legal team that's looking into those issues, and I think that's, at this point, all that I can really say about it.
Then another person writes, is there a place to support you financially? This is Robert, who's writing in, I think, from Tampa.
I do have a GoFundMe page to raise money for relocating for legal expenses. But I also want to tell people that I don't want anybody's last dollar. I used to donate money when, you know, I'd give a $15 check to the World Wildlife Fund when I had $10 in my bank account. And I'd overdraw it, and my husband and I would fight so much about it. But I don't want to do that to anybody. You know, Christmas is coming up. There are a lot of people hungry right now. There are kids that, you know, all across the country live in houses or buildings where there's insufficient heating or their parents can't afford the heat bill. And if you have a limited amount of resources, I strongly encourage you to donate to a local food bank or any kind of organization that's looking to help people, especially children. Before you consider helping me with my current legal predicament. But I do have a GoFundMe if you're one of those people who's looking to do that.
Chip writes in, and this is a question we talked about earlier. Chip writes in, simple yes or no question. Did Ms. Jones illegally hack or access the state website or the state's computer system?
No. There's your simple answer.
All right, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Rebecca, would you mind if we took a call or two from listeners, or tell me?
No, I'm here for you guys.
All right.
As long as you want to talk.
You're listening to 88.5 FM. We're talking with state whistleblower Rebecca Jones, and let's go to Russell in Tampa. Russell, thank you for calling. What's your question for Rebecca?
Oh, hey, a couple things are very revealing in this interview. Number one, this is about her. This isn't about anybody else, and this is about money, okay? That's coming across pretty clearly. My question is her position here that she's some kind of noble martyr and everybody else is in on a conspiracy to defraud the numbers? I don't understand why everybody else, there's hundreds, if not thousands of people who work for the DOH. Nobody's coming forward. What's that about?
All right, Russell, thank you. Thank you for the question. Rebecca, what would you say back to Russell?
Well, first, I'm not a martyr and I'm not a hero, and I said that previously. I'm just one of the people who's trying to do the right thing. And after what happened to me back in May, with the governor attacking me in front of the vice president of the United States, no less, I'm not surprised that people don't want their name out there. However, I am hardly the only person at the Department of Health who's spoken out. There have been multiple articles in the Sun Sentinel, in the Miami Herald, in Yahoo News, the Washington Post, all over the country. People have come out and said, I will tell you this on the record, but I don't want my name attached to it because I don't want people storming my house with guns. And that is how this information is getting out. The Sun Sentinel, you know, didn't figure out all by itself what was happening or that these reports, you know, said what they did. They had people at DOH who said, hey, you need to look at this. I don't want my name attached to it, but here's the information that you need. And I'm totally fine with people not attaching their name. I would never ask someone to subject themselves intentionally to what I've gone through, especially if they have family. And I've always said that I forgive people at DOH who didn't, you know, speak out right away, given what happened, because it's a lot to ask somebody to do. I wasn't fully aware of what was going to happen to me when I spoke out, but now that I am, I understand why other people are afraid. And no, nothing has ever been about money for me. I need to pay lawyers, and I'm still working, and I volunteer all of my time to the COVID Monitor, which is the national K-12 tracking and reporting site for schools in K-12 in the country. But I grew up dirt poor, living in shelters dirt poor. I have never cared about money. That's why, despite a six-figure salary offer, I stayed with the Department of Health, making less than $50,000 a year as a manager of an entire office. I have devoted my life to public service, knowing I'd never make money. And I've already said that whatever I don't need to fight this, I'm donating to a legal fund that helps provide legal aid to whistleblowers who are being pursued by the state.
You mentioned the COVID Monitor website. So is your website back up then, and where can people see it?
I had my website back up the next day.
After the raid?
Yeah. I received a good amount of donations to run all of my businesses over the summer, and the COVID Monitor is one of those projects, and I, you know, dipped into that pot the next day and got myself new equipment, new laptop, new desktop, new phone, all of that. And so I was back up the next day. I missed one day. It is the first time since January that I have not been able to do my job tracking COVID.
And if people want to see the website, what's the easiest way to search for it?
So the COVIDmonitor.com is the national database for tracking K-12 cases in schools and the students and staff. And we founded that back in July before schools reopened, and we've been doing this since then. And we only use official data. So the data that school districts and states are providing, and we have 39 states right now that provide at the state level, and then a number of states where we look at individual districts. And that project is a nonprofit, a certified nonprofit. And it's a partnership with FinMango, who's a financial literacy organization, works mostly with financial literacy in third world countries and has devoted resources to this, and a partnership with Google. And we've worked with Washington Post, the New York Times, Johns Hopkins. So this data's been out there for a while, and it's the COVIDmonitor.com. And of course, my, you know, one woman venture is FloridaCOVIDAction.com, and I've been doing that since June.
Rebecca, several members of Congress are calling for the state inspector general to look into the case and look into the raid on your home. Tell us what your thoughts are about that, and is that the way to get to at least part of the bottom of this? You know, why the raid happened, and whether or not they used too much force in going into your house.
I absolutely want them to look into that, but I think more important than anything else is an investigation into DeSantis's handling of data and information during COVID-19. Deliberate efforts to mislead the public that have been verified by just about every press agency in the state. And that led to the very predictable and unnecessary deaths of tens of thousands of people in the state. According to the CDC, because Florida has never tracked or reported probable cases and deaths the way states like New York and most other states do, Florida's number two for underreporting deaths by as many as 8,000. So we're much closer to 30,000 deaths than right now in reality than we are 20 and possibly more. And I think that whenever there's a new administration in this country, there needs to be a wide-scale investigation into how each state handled this virus response. And I'm afraid that Florida is going to go down as the most corrupt and negligent state in the country.
And what agency would be the best one to do that investigation of Florida to see if we are undercounting the number of deaths?
Well, I hope that the CDC can be put back in charge the way that they should have been. But as far as the, you know, congressional investigation, I'm just a normal person. I have no idea who would be responsible for that or how that would work or what the legal avenues are. I just really want people to be able to understand what happened here and how those consequences played out in our state for our people.
Rebecca, you talked about state workers being your sources and also the sources of these investigative newspaper reports that have come out recently, basically agreeing with you that the state's COVID numbers are being undercounted. What do state workers tell you about why they don't go public? Why they're willing to talk to you or maybe talk to a reporter, but they're not willing to go public? What do they say?
They're afraid. They'll flat out tell me they're afraid. They said, no offense, but I don't want to end up like you. All over the news for a week, you know, reporters outside your house, and now I've got the police harassing me, and I'm getting threatening letters in the mail sent anonymously, and I don't feel comfortable reporting them to the police because I don't want the police involved in my life. And they don't want to be like that. Some of the people who left early on, like Scott Pritchard, who was the head of the epidemiology team for the entire COVID response, quit in June, the day that DeSantis announced he'd be forcing schools to reopen brick and mortar. After 15 years, the head of the response quit that day. He got in his camper and went out to the West Coast. He immediately left. He never talked to anybody. I spoke to him briefly, but they don't want this. And I understand that because I didn't either. My hand was forced when DeSantis went and trashed me in front of the vice president. And I understand that and I sympathize with it. I've had several people have come to me and say, hey, I want to come forward. And I've actually said, look, I know you think that this is all glamour and fun, but let me tell you about what will happen if you decide to do that. And I just want you to understand what it means to come forward before you decide to do that. And most of them decide after I explain that not to. And I have had friends very close to it, and I think that right now more than ever, there are people who are ready to just say enough is enough. Maybe they're waiting until the response is over so that they can do the best job that they can from the inside instead of everybody leaving and then, you know, running a skeleton crew trying to deal with a virus that is worse now than it's ever been at any point for our state. And I admire that. I don't think it's naive, because if every good person left, then it would really be bad. They just replaced them all with Uber drivers. That's important. And so maybe they're waiting until this is over, until they've done their job and they can walk away and say, I did everything I can. And I unfortunately was fired and didn't get that opportunity. But that's what I'm hoping for, because clearly from the articles that are coming out, one of the Sun Sentinel pieces said they spoke to, you know, 50 people within the state. There are people talking. And as long as they're doing that, as long as the information is getting out there, do we really need to know their names? Do we need to drag them through this? I'm not so sure.
As long as they're providing data that's from the state, from inside the state, and it's verifiable, their names, I would think, don't have to be associated with it if they're providing paper or computer records. Well, you're listening to a live interview on WMNF in Tampa with Rebecca Jones. She's the whistleblower who was fired after she raised questions about the accuracy of Florida's COVID-19 data, and this is 88.5 FM. Kathleen writes in to ask, will there be a way to accurately reconstruct the data on COVID here in Florida for the past year?
Yes, absolutely. Reanalysis of deaths caused by any kind of disaster is actually an entire subset of geography, which is what I taught my PhD in. And we did it with, you know, Hurricane Maria, going back and figuring out how many excess deaths there were of certain types in the days and weeks after the hurricane hit. I'm most familiar with it from hurricanes because that's what I do. I worked on some research doing that for Hurricane Katrina because I'm from the area. And they'll look at death records, death certificates, hospital records. They'll go through every piece of information that's available and reconstruct what really happened. And that's what the CDC has started to do by publishing the data about how many excess deaths and how many are underreported in each state, which came out last month or the month before. But you can look for that on the CDC website, and it will be done with a fine-tooth comb afterwards. And I think that it's a little late, but it's very research intensive and will take some time. But it's important work that will absolutely be done.
And in this country, we have a higher number of excess deaths compared to what we might normally experience. And that number of excess deaths is higher than the actual number of COVID deaths that are being reported.
Yeah, and there will be an academic discussion about whether or not to include excess suicide deaths or accounting for fewer deaths for, say, car accidents, because fewer people were driving and going to work. So there's a lot of different elements that have to be considered to go into that. But yeah, we know just from the raw number of excess deaths that it's much worse than what we would normally expect for this time of year, even with a bad flu season.
Let's go to Jeanette from Gulfport, who has a question. Jeanette, you're on with Rebecca Jones. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say that I agree that it was a Gestapo tactic that they did, and it was intimidation. And I think that it's obvious that DeSantis dislikes her because she's a whistleblower, and I'm proud of her for doing what she did. And I just hope he doesn't get reelected for a second term, period.
All right, Jeanette, thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you, Jeanette.
And let's take another phone call. This is 88.5 FM. We're going to go to Nancy in St. Petersburg. Hey, Nancy, you're on with Rebecca Jones.
Hi, Dr. Jones. Thank you. I just want to say thank you so much for what you're doing. Everybody that has spoken out during this incredible time, I just all of a sudden I have faith again in humanity. And I'm just so proud of you. And, you know, anything that I can do, you know, I'm here. And I just wanted to thank you. And thank you, Rob, for having her on. This is a beautiful day. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Thank you. And
thank you.
Dave writes this, even if she committed a third-degree felony for access, the issue is asking for whistleblowers to come forward. What kind of world demands retribution for questioning a government, writes David. That's David's email out there. Let's, Rebecca, thanks for taking all this time with us. Do you have time to take a few more phone calls?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Daryl, thanks for calling in. What's your question for Rebecca?
Yes, I just would like to say to Rebecca, I'm glad that you came through the incident without any hurt, harm, or danger happening to you, your kids, or your family. And for all the Bible-quoting people like Marco Rubio, Republicans, here's a good scripture for you. Fret not yourself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious of the workers of iniquity, for they soon shall be cut down. I'm glad that you are not Florida's version of Breonna Taylor, and you stand strong, and we'll keep you in our, really, the real Christians will keep you in our prayers.
All right, Daryl, thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Daryl, thank you so much. And believe me, I am completely aware that if I didn't look the way that I did, that the situation could have and most likely would have gone in a completely different direction. And I had time to put on my socks and hug my children and tell them goodbye, and Breonna Taylor did not.
Yeah.
And that the police have said that this is standard operating procedure is one of the most concerning problems with this issue.
Yeah, well, what I just say, and I want to hang up, that yeah, day of reckoning is coming. It's coming for Donald Trump on the 20th of next year, and for DeSantis, his time is coming too. You take care, and y'all
Thank
be
you.
Blessed. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Daryl. Thank you for your comments. Jeff writes this, Rebecca is a hero. There are plenty of people who would bow down to intimidation. She's really putting her life on the line by speaking out, and she deserves credit for that, writes Jeff. Yeah, we're getting a lot of emails, Rebecca. Deb and Lutz writes, you hit a home run by having Rebecca on your show so we can hear from the source about what happened. Given that dangerous white nationalist militia members, like the Proud Boys, describe themselves as chauvinists, I worry about Rebecca's safety. These people have threatened violence against anyone that opposes Trump and his loyalists like Governor DeSantis. Question, as a whistleblower, can the state of Florida or any other entity provide her and her family with security?
I actually was forced to hire an armed security officer outside my house after the police released my home address and my phone number, which I've changed, publicly in the video that they released. They didn't redact it. They actually didn't even redact what school my son goes to and what grade he's in. So, yeah, the police doxed me, and I do have armed security. And, yes, it's a very real threat, and that's part of the reason I want to move my family out of the state.
The police published your address?
Yes, they did. They said it several times very clearly in the video that they released. There are periods where the audio cuts out in the police release video. I have no idea what information they were withholding, because my home address, my phone number, which has changed now, my son's school, all of this information was not blacked out in the video. They just released it.
Do your lawyers say anything about that?
They say quite a bit about that, actually, but I'll let them handle that in court.
Okay. All right. We're talking with the whistleblower, Rebecca Jones. She was fired from her state job a few months ago after she said that the state was manipulating COVID-19 data. And this is WMNF in Tampa. David writes this, as DeSantis saying, also DeSantis saying she put lives at risk is the worst part of his gaslighting, as he himself is a blatant anti-masker. What's more, he's even going against the White House request to increase, not decrease, restrictions on the state right now. And Rebecca talked about this earlier. Rebecca, have the number of threats, I mean, is after the police published your address, did the number of threats increase?
Yes. I've never received hate mail, not once. In the last 7 months, I've never received a letter to my P.O. box that was threatening or aggressive or vulgar. And last night or the night before, all the days are starting to blur together, I received a threatening letter to my home mailing address. And, yeah, that was a very terrifying and real feeling, because the person in the letter even notes that now you can just get my address online. And, like I said, that's why I have armed security around.
Hmm. Well, Rebecca Jones, thank you so much for spending all this time with us. If people want to find your COVID tracking website, what's the best place to find it at?
You can go to FloridaCovidAction.com for my Florida site, or the covidmonitor.com for the K-12 national school database.
And you filed a whistleblower complaint against the state. Is there any movement on that?
We were supposed to receive the report out last week, but DOH's legal team has decided to review it first at the last second. So we're still waiting to see that.
Well, Rebecca Jones, good luck. I hope you stay safe, and thank you for coming on WMNF.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Thanks, Rebecca. Rebecca Jones is the person who was fired from the state of Florida. She was once the COVID data person here, chief COVID data person here in the state of Florida. But when she raised questions about the accuracy of the state's site, she was fired. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about today's show on extension 115. We'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening, and now stay tuned for the Surly Feminists. They're coming up next right here on WMNF in Tampa. And thanks to Bill Grace. Bill Grace has been our phone producer today. We now go up to Washington, D.C. for today's latest news.